Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by EJF.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by EDraft.com. We come live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Hout-Vader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Oh, Carlos, I'm up to my, you know what, in snow and cold weather up here. But, hey, on the golf scene, we got Brant Snedeker back in the winner's circle at Pebble Beach for the second time in 3 years. Dustin Johnson had a good showing, and Jim Furyk blew another 54-hole lead. No. Carlos, we here at the Back 9 Report do not want to blow our big lead, so we have another action-packed show for our listeners tonight. Let's go!
Let's go, and we have not only one, we have two VIGs for you today, and I know you're going to enjoy it. One of them is an author, okay? It's author of the book, and yes, listen to it well, How to Quit Golf. Yes, a 12-step program. So we're going to know a little bit about that, so don't jump into it. And we're going to have J.R. Slaughter, he's the president of Juvent Sports. But hey, Fred, we have to start right away, and like you said, we have to keep our lead. So I believe we're going to be talking about something that I thought we were done with. What are we going to talk about first?
We're never done with it, Carlos. It just goes on and on and on. It's just like those soap operas on TV that have been on for like 40 years. You know, before we jump into the Par 5 news, a lot of activity on the Ryder Cup front, and so we wanted to kind of open with that tonight. But, you know, it just seems like we just stopped talking about the last Ryder Cup at Glen Eagles, as you said. And now we're already talking about the next Ryder Cup in 2016 at Hazeltine outside of Minneapolis. The Europeans will announce their Ryder Cup captain tomorrow. Smart money's on Darren Clark, with Miguel Angel Jimenez having an outside chance. But a lot happening here in the U.S. It wasn't supposed to be announced till next week, but reports are that this big-time committee they have has picked Davis Love to be the next U.S. captain. As you remember, Carlos, Love was the captain in the loss to the Europeans at Medina in 2012. You know, this seems a little bit like an odd choice, but if the players want that, then maybe everyone can get on the same page for a change. No matter what, it builds the Ryder Cup drama and gives us plenty of fodder to talk about for the next 18 months. And, you know, Carlos, maybe it's a kind of a thing where they want to win one for Davis. They felt bad that they didn't win at Medina, and they want to make it up to him up at Hazeltine. You know, Davis did pretty much everything right there. You know, he had a 10-4 lead on Saturday at one time, Saturday morning, and, you know, it was a 10-6 lead Saturday night. And then the players just, well, the American players lost it, but, you know, you had Rose and Luke Donald and Rory McIlroy and G-Mac and Ian Poulter and Keimer just went out and took it away from him, really, on Sunday. So maybe the players want to make it up to him. But my question is, Carlos, what happened to Freddie and what happened to Paul Azinger? And, you know, what's all the deal with that?
I would say that, Fred, first of all, Freddie Couples was not among those 11 task force members. So, you know, as he said after that meeting in San Diego, he said that, hey, I honestly think the next guy those shoes will be someone the players want. So there you have it. There's a lot of love for Davis Love there. And I don't think there's as much for Freddie right now or Paul Azinger. I think that the person that least got to be talking about things about being the captain, you know, that's the one that got it, that got the job at the end of the day. And to me, yeah, like you say, he did nothing wrong. I mean, it was the players who blew it up. Now let's see, the players got what they wanted. But I think, you know, sometimes, hey, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And along with this, Carlos, what I understand, there's going to be like a 20-year plan kind of in place. Steve Stricker is going to be very involved in the next Ryder Cup, and they're kind of grooming him to come up through as the next captain maybe. And they're going to have kind of old captains and new prospects all involved as assistants in the future, and they'll just move up through the system. So maybe that'll be a good thing. We'll see. But that's enough Ryder Cup, Carlos.
Just before you finish, and I'm sorry, you know, he has to be careful, and everybody has to be careful. You know, scrutiny will be bigger this time, so, you know, you have to be careful about it. It's going to be much more intense this time, so look out for that. And my money is also on Darren Clark. It's not only a smart money, my money. So.
Oh, okay. Well, then it's a done deal then.
Yeah, it's not. So let's get on with the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, another person, I would say subject, but we have to talk about person, has been on the news lately, and it seems like the Ryder Cup is always on the news every week, and it's Rory McIlroy. So what is going on with him right now this week?
Well, you know what they say, Carlos. You know, there is no such thing as bad press, and Rory's been getting a lot of press. You know, for winning golf tournaments and for lawsuits and all kinds of stuff, for breaking up with girlfriends and new girlfriends and different girlfriends and all that stuff. But he's in the headlines again this week. He's not playing. He took a week off. We won't see him until the Honda Classic here for another week. But the world number one is committed to play in the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He did do that. And then we should see Rory in three of the four Florida Swing tournaments. Like I say, he'll probably play in the Honda, the WGC Cadillac at Doral, then at Bay Hill, which will probably be his last start prior to the Masters, I'm guessing. But in the other news, McIlroy did settle his lawsuit with his former management company, Horizon, last week. It only cost him $25 million, just pocket change for the poor boy. It seems that the tax department for the United Kingdom also has some problems with the tax avoidance investments that McIlroy, along with several other sports personalities, including Graham McDowell, invested in through their management companies. Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs is investigating if the program's unfairly exploited incentives designed to boost rundown city centers under which investors could claim tax relief. There is no suggestion any of the backers knew how the schemes were operated, and none of the practices were illegal. You know, they're stressing that. But the revenue and customs people have warned the scheme managers, the investors, could now be hit with accelerated payment notices. That sounds like me. Somebody's going to get a pretty good-sized bill, Carlos. This means they would have to pay back up to 70% of tax relief earned before the investigation is even completed. The cash would be refunded if the schemes are found to be valid. As I mentioned, McIlroy, Graham McDowell, a couple of soccer players were among the investors who plowed in well over $10 million into a project in Liverpool. McIlroy's representative insisted he invested in legitimate schemes. And see, Carlos, now this is what I always say, you know, this is strictly a problem for the rich. You know, someone's always trying to take some of your money away, if not individuals for their shady business ideas, then the government's trying to get back taxes or more taxes. See, Carlos, I don't have these problems. I'm a poor guy, and I'm happy for it. So we'll just leave it at that. Hey, Carlos, you're going to talk a little bit. There's a story out about the PGA's turning hip-hop, or what are we doing? We're going for the younger group? What's the scoop?
We are, but before that, I have to say that Kieran Clark...
Kanye West isn't going to be involved,
no.
Is he?
No, he's not. But before I say that, I'm going to say, you know, Kieran Clark would be very proud of you, the way you said with that English accent, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. You know, it sounded so English. I mean, I was so surprised. But,
ta-ta.
Oh, my. Ta-ta. But, hey, like you said, you know, that PGA Tour is just trying to broaden its appeal to the millennials. It's planned to do so via Scratch TV. That's an online TV network promising to be golf, but louder. Golf is an action-adventure sport now? Wow. That's the positioning from the PGA Tour, which has launched an internet-only video network dubbed Scratch TV, aimed at making the centuries-old game more appealing to younger audiences. The Scratch TV multi-channel network, which is delivered natively across, what else, Facebook, Twitter, and Vine, Snapchat, YouTube, and other platforms, will carry advertising and sponsored content and feature daily golf videos comprised of original and curated programming, PGA Tour highlights, and videos from events. The idea is to deliver short attention span golf content to, who else, the potential to go viral. You know, the network soft launched 2 weeks ago in conjunction with the Phoenix Open and the Farmers Insurance Open. A Scratch TV has featured golf pros Ricky Fowler, Ryan Palmer, Patrick Reed, Keegan Bradley, and who will forget the trophy that Jason Day received just a week ago via a parachute. In another bid to appeal to millennials, Scratch will include footage shot via GoPro cameras, which has found traction in action sports broadcasts, just like golf, you know, action sports, worn by players at tournaments and mounted on aerial drones. I just can't imagine players with a GoPro camera on their hats. It's not clear how effectively this message of "this is not your father's golf" will get across to millennials, many of whom may not appreciate the unbridled joy of walking around a ball with small ball with sticks. But here's the bigger picture. The PGA Tour feels compelled to create a new brand off the TV to reach the next generation of consumers. To be sure, the association still generates the bulk of its revenue from TV deals. PGA Tour tournaments actually annually are broadcast to more than 1 billion households in 225 countries, and the new internet video outlet won't broadcast live event coverage. But Scratch TV could evolve into a product that bypasses networks by going directly to the fans, akin to what Major League Baseball offers through the MLB.TV over-the-top package. This Scratch TV is a joint venture of the PGA Tour and New York-based digital media company BetRocket, which created and operates Action Sports Network A and launched YouTube's soccer destination Kick TV for Major League Soccer. Fred, but really, are kids really into golf? Well, we have to say that in the U.S., there are 6.2 million golfers, 18 to 34, representing about one-fourth of the sports players in the States. That is according to the National Golf Foundation. And those players spend more than $5 billion on the sport annually, that's what the group says, which makes them an attractive target for advisors. My only question is this really about Bradley, you know, the audience, or is it really about the money, money, money?
You know the answer to that. It's always about the money. But, hey, Carlos, I got some programming ideas for them. If they really want to boost the audience to a young men audience, they need to do some programming like with Paulina Gretzky or, you know, Natalie Galbus, Blair O'Neill, Lexi Thompson, Jason Duffner's wife traveling around in bikinis or something. You know, that'll get their attention. I guarantee it, man.
For sure.
Hey,
for sure.
on to the next item in the Par 5 news tonight. There has been an arrest in the Allenby case. If you remember, Robert Allenby had a bizarre evening after missing the cut in the Sony Open in Hawaii a couple of weeks ago. He was mugged, drugged, robbed, and left on a city street. Honolulu police are reporting that they arrested a local, and he has been charged with three counts of identity theft, second-degree theft, and one count of unauthorized possession of a confidential personal information in connection with Allenby. He was arrested Wednesday and is being held on $100,000 bail. He'll make his first court appearance next week. The police said that Harbison had used three credit cards to charge an amount below $20,000. The arrest comes almost a month after Allenby went to police and told investigators he was bashed, kidnapped, thrown in the boot of a car, and robbed, and then dumped on a main road. Several homeless people came to his aid that night soon after he had left an upmarket wine bar in Waikiki. The story got all messed up. You know, he said he fell, he was drugged, he didn't know what he was doing. But the police said that no other suspects were being sought, and the matter was now with prosecutors. It can be revealed. The accused, Harbison, has 5 previous convictions, including 1 felony drug conviction, misdemeanor theft, and petty theft, having an open liquor container in the vehicle, and for failing to show up at a court hearing. As for reports that Allenby had been in a strip club spending over $1,000, that is just not true. Evidence shows Allenby was not in the club in the early morning of January 17th. There is no evidence he was ever in that strip club. Our investigation shows he was not at the club. McCarthy said several Australians were in the strip club, but not Allenby. It was just a case of mistaken identity. So, looks like the Allenby case is going to come to a conclusion. They got a guy. It'll be curious to see what the whole story is, but this thing just a little bit keeps eking out all the time, Carlos.
Just like a soap opera.
Yeah.
Adding up and adding up. So, I have to talk. We were talking about the money, right? It's not about the money. It's not, you know. When Donald Trump is involved, it's never about
no.
it. No, he's not. He wants to spend some money on yet another Florida golf course. But this time, things are a little different. Trump has his eye on Key Biscayne's Crandon Park. That's a highly regarded public course that is a part of the Miami-Dade County's park system. According to a report by the Miami Herald, Trump has made an unsolicited offer to take over the management of Crandon Park, including a $10 million investment for course improvements and a promise to not raise green fees for county residents. Trump's spokespeople said they could do more for the course, financially speaking, right, to restore it to its original grandeur than the county could. Members of the Matheson family, descendants of the prominent American industrialist William John Matheson, currently hold the deed to Crandon Park and have final authority over park decisions. Don't know why Trump thinks he needs to fly to Crandon Park's rescue. They have money. Trump owns 4 of the top 5 golf courses ranked by South Florida Business Journal. The 3rd place lot belongs to Crandon Park. It's the only one on those top 3, you know. And Bruce Matheson from that family told the Herald, if you got the number 3 golf course, why do you need Donald Trump? I can't pass judgment until I see the final proposal. Cost is one of the major differences between Trump's Florida courses and the one at Crandon Park. At nearby Trump National Doral, the home of the famous Blue Monster course, a round cost is the mere $395 during the winter. At Crandon, a winter round sets you back only $180. And there are further discounts for county residents. Miami-Dade's County Park Directors Jack Cardes told the Herald that a public hearing on the proposal is expected to take place in March, which was just one of the many steps in the process. Fred, Dear Donald at least doesn't have the mayor of Doral, Luigi Borria, to contend with. As you might remember, last month the mayor requested the city council via email the key to the city only for Mrs. Paula M. Sugard, who is the Miss Universe pageant president, and asked to please cancel the request for the other key to their Donald. You know, why was that? It's easy. It's because
it's not about the money. We don't need your money. We just want to make the world
say. That's why.
Hey, Carlos, I just got one thing to say. If you ever hear me spending $400 to play 18 holes of golf, you call somebody and have them come and commit me, okay? There's only 2 places maybe I would even consider even thinking about that. One of them is on the Monterey Peninsula where they were playing last weekend at Pebble Beach and possibly Cypress Point there and maybe Augusta National. But you know what? Other than that, I don't think there's any golf courses worth that kind of money. And anyway. More power to Dear Donald. He knows what he's doing. He's made a lot of money. Carlos, we've got the Rio de Janeiro Olympic golf course is back in the news again. It just seems like they go from one thing to another down there. It is nearing completion. The new golf course has helped to clean up an abandoned and forgotten piece of land in Rio de Janeiro. But not everyone is happy, Carlos. A group which calls itself Occupy Golf says the massive Olympic golf course has taken away a public area. The local city government is basically killing this reserve, expelling alligator species, snakes, birds. The city has another golf course. Why can't they use it? You know, why they got to come over here and disrupt this? One of the protesters complained that the massive amount of water needed to keep the course green is coming at the expense of the residents of other nearby towns and nearby areas. You know, you got to keep the grass green here, so they're using water, but they're taking it from us. Coastal Brazil has suffered from a massive drought. Residents suspect water meant for them is being diverted. That's not a fact, but that's just kind of suspected. But this isn't just a fight over the golf course. You know, when the world judges how well or badly mega sporting events go, the criteria are pretty limited. You know, are the fans happy? Are the athletes safe and comfortable? And did the venues come up, you know, measure up to standards? You know, local communities, though, kind of see things differently. They think about, you know, think about the World Cup. It lasts a month. The Olympics last 16 days. The people who live here, I mean, they got to deal with this stuff the rest of the time they live there. So, you know, both the World Cup and the Sochi Olympics that were in Russia were marked by massive expenditure. And, you know, the city of Rio vows this isn't going to happen. The message that we want to spread to the world is how to use the games to benefit the city, how to use the games to serve the city, said president of the Municipal Olympic Committee. That's our mission. That's our aim. He points to the new infrastructure like roads and bus lanes that have increased the number of people who use public transport. Olympic planners say more than half the venues are being repurposed from existing buildings. Other buildings will only be temporary because it's most cost maintaining unused venues that strains the city budget. So they won't have a lot of those to deal with when the Olympics are over. But the main way officials are planning to make this cost effective is through something called private-public partnerships. In principle, it means that private companies foot the cost of certain projects. 60% of the budget comes from private sector, so they're saving money. Private money is paying for projects such as the Olympics Athletes Village as well as the golf course. You know, far from being a wild area, where this abandoned land was once, the golf course is being built. There was an illegal operation dredging sand for concrete out there. You know, it was just pretty much a wilderness there at the edge of town, and they've done something with it, and they've used private sector money to do it. You know, so. You know, one of the complaints always is, well, yeah, you're taking private sector money, but then when it's all over, you're going to turn public land back over to the private sector, and they're going to build condos and houses and sell lots and all that stuff. And you know what? If they're going to do that, somebody's going to pay taxes on it. Somebody's going to get to work on it. It's going to make jobs. You know what? It's all good, but people don't understand that, Carlos, and so we end up with things like the Occupy Golf movement. So. Good luck to those people. I don't see much coming of that. But, Carlos, that is the end of the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network for tonight. We want our listeners to know that the United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available through United Golf Network. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. Pretty good deal, Carlos. I don't know if you've checked it out, but you know, the guys need to look that over. They can make some commissions, help their buddies get them signed up. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to MyGolf in U.S., which offers discounted golf rounds in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner allows you to sell used or new equipment and earn sales credits on every sale. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity. Carlos, back to you.
And remember, they were created by entrepreneurs to give golfers the opportunity to play golf, make money, and enjoy life. What could be better than that? That wraps up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And right now, it's time to start our VIG, Very Important Guest of the Week segment. And we're going to start first with Craig Brass. He's the author, yes, of a book called How to Quit Golf, a 12-Step Program. You know, why are we bringing something to quit golf? But hey, listen to it. You know, just let me read something to you, and it's about this book, and it says, all golfers know they don't need to play golf. The problem is they don't know how to quit. Golf has a beginning, a middle, but no end. The game has no exit strategy. Every time you think of quitting, golf entices you back with a 250-yard drive down the middle, an unfathomable recovery shot to the green, or a birdie on the hardest hole of the green, of the course, as if to say, you're almost there. Just need a little more work and you'll get it. Don't go. Any day you'll have the game you figure out, and when you do, you'll be the envy of all. But we all know it's not going to happen. You know it. Your partner knows it. Everyone knows it, because no one gets any better at this game except the guy you're playing against every Sunday. So, you know, this book is really, you know, if you want some guidance of how to get out of it, which I don't know why, because, you know, I wouldn't do it, but hey, it will offer it, but if not, it will offer you a great laugh about it. So, hey, Fred, how about Craig Brass and his book, How to Quit Golf, a 12-Step Program?
Yeah, Craig is a friend of mine. I hate to admit it, he's from this state up north that we don't like to talk about. Matter of fact, he lives right there, right near the stupid U of M campus and everything. But, you know, Carlos, there are books about the history of golf, where to play golf, how to play golf my way, his way, and every which way. But how many books have you ever read about how to quit golf? You know, even alcoholics, drug and sex addicts, they have a 12-step program to help them improve their lives. And we know how golf can overtake a life. Craig Brass's book, How to Quit Golf, a 12-Step Program, uses the Alcoholics Anonymous 12-Step process to give frustrated golfaholics a roadmap to stop playing golf. It's all done very tongue-in-cheek, Carlos. It's very humorous, and it's a very enjoyable read. And Craig is always a fun guy to be around. He has a little different humor, but he's a good guy, and I had a chance to tape an interview with him here a couple weeks ago, so let's go ahead and play that.
Let's play the interview.
We are happy to have Craig Brass, the author of How to Quit Golf, a 12-Step Program, on the show with us tonight. And Craig, you know, we talk a lot about golf. You know, there's books out there about the history of golf, where to play golf, how to swing my way, his way, and that way, but there are no books about how to quit golf. How did you come up with this idea?
Well, I'm not the first person to think about quitting, am I, Fred?
No.
And it was just I was having a lunch with a friend of mine, the guy who wrote the foreword, Jeff Daniels, and we played a lot of golf together, and he just threw out this question to me at lunch one day, and he goes, do you still love golf? And he's known for throwing bizarre questions out there, but this sort of threw me, and I said, I think I do. And I just thought on the way home, I thought, you know, geez, that's kind of funny, and I'm kind of addicted to it, and went through the whole process of, well, how do you quit something you're addicted to? And then obviously a 12-step idea came up. So I went home that night, looked at Alcoholics Anonymous website and said, hey, there's 12 steps, and went to Gamblers Anonymous and, hey, there's 12 steps, and they're really similar, almost the same ones to Alcoholics Anonymous. And because I'm big into research and due diligence, I went over to Sexaholics Anonymous just to make sure that the 12 steps were the same. Spent a little bit too much time there, but at the end of the day, I had an outline. And it was just kind of funny. It's, you know, everybody's trying to learn how to play, but everybody gets so frustrated with the game from time to time, and it just seemed like a fun idea.
You know, I really need to caution our listeners. You know, we talked about the Ohio State Buckeyes winning the national championship, and Craig is from the great state of Michigan, and he actually lives not too far from that unmentionable town up north. I think he's a Michigan State fan, thank God for that, but we do have to take everything he says with a grain of salt because he is from Michigan.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that you throw that caveat out there for your listeners. I did.
Hey, Craig,
does it help that I went to Bowling Green?
Yes, that's right down the road from me, actually. That's just a few of your good drives from here. A bunch of mine, but just a few of yours.
Yeah.
Hey, how long have you been playing?
The worst golf course in North America. How long have I been playing?
Yeah, how long have you been playing? How did you get started playing golf?
I've been playing since I was around 11 years old. And a friend of mine was playing, and he brought over a golf club. He had a putter, and that was it. And I had kind of a big background with there was a sandbox in our background. And we took the putter, and I smoothed out the sandbox with a big broom and put one of those green flower pot holders, green flower pots, in the middle of the sandbox. And just started hitting the ball onto the sandbox and putting with it. We literally took a baseball bat, turned it upside down, and hit the ball with the butt end of the bat so it could go up in the air. And that's how I started. And I'm not a whole lot better since those days. But, yeah, it's been a long time.
You know, you get a chance to get around and play some pretty nice courses. I think one of the highest-ranked private clubs in the nation, Crystal Downs, I think you get the opportunity to play a little bit up there. Is that correct?
That is correct. We have the opportunity to play it. It's been a long time coming. But, yeah, we're finally up there. Get a chance to knock it around there. Beautiful. Just, you know, wonderful, wonderful golf course.
So you said you were talking to Jeff Daniels, the famous actor, comedian, singer, great Michigan native. And you guys play a little golf together, and he actually wrote the foreword for the book, and he had a comment in there. It's kind of like you guys walked off a green after turning sure pars into even yet more double bogeys, and just kind of looked at each other and said, "Why do we continue to beat ourselves up doing this?"
Yeah, that's actually a true story. We did that. We belonged to the same club out in Ann Arbor. Called Polo Fields, a nice residential development course that's been around for about 20 years. And, you know, you're sitting there and, you know, you're looking 80 in the eye and you've got three holes left, three holes that you've played numerous times, and you could make three pars in a row in your sleep and you go double, double, double to finish. And everybody's been there, right? Everybody's been there, and you just look at each other like, why are we doing this? But there wasn't a fishing hole close enough to escape to, so I guess we, you know.
You know, there's a golf course out by Columbus, Double Eagle, that, you know, on the golf carts, they put fishing poles on there. So if you get out there and you're frustrated, you can just start fishing. Some guys never come back.
Absolutely beautiful. And somebody asked me, they said, so the book came out, and we had a lot of fun with it, and somebody said, you're going to write, you know, another book like this. So you're like, what, How to Quit Fishing? I mean, has anybody got so frustrated with fishing that they've broken the rod across their knee and, you know, thrown it into the water? You know, it's just this inherent, you know, aspect of the game that I think we really, really love it, and it's a challenge. But we get so frustrated when we can't perform at the level that we think we should. And somebody once asked me why I thought that was, and I go, you know what? Because it looks so easy when the guys that are good do it, doesn't it?
You know, you use a quote from the book is, the issue isn't the desire to quit, but the ability to quit. Nobody needs to play golf. Everybody who plays golf knows they don't need to play golf. The problem is nobody knows how to quit playing golf. And, Craig, I mean, I've probably quit playing 50 times in 45 years, but maybe even more like 100 times. But I always keep going back. It just sucks me back in.
Yeah, and that's kind of the funny aspect to it. So here we're sitting in here in the winter. You know, it's not as bad as the winter of last year, obviously. And I did live through the winter of 78 at Bowling Green, for those of you who've been around that long. So you're stopped playing, right? You're not playing. You stopped. It's an easy time to quit. And yet all you want to do when it's 12 degrees outside is go out and play. And you can't wait to play. And then you get out there, and then you go, why am I doing this? You spent the entire winter thinking nothing about playing, and you get out there and you're slapping it all over the place. It's just a funny game. It's not like anything else.
And, you know, you're out there playing, and the one thing that always draws you back, you hit that one perfect shot, and that tuning fork goes off inside your body, and then your mind lies to you and says, you know, you could do this all the time. And then the golf gods are laughing at you, you know, saying, we fooled another one, we hooked another one. How do you read this book, how do you break yourself and get away from that?
The brilliant shot, yeah. And it always comes at the least expected time on the least expected hole. And, you know, I had a chance to play. I was with you down at the Golf Writers Association tournament last April, and the day before I had a chance to play Pinehurst number 2. Never played it before, and coming out of the winter we had last year, you know, 90 inches of snow, not a chance to hit a ball before the middle of April or the early April when I went down there, birdied the first hole right out of the gate. You know, 3-wood wedge, 15 feet, birdie. I look at everybody, and they're looking at me. Didn't make a birdie the rest of the time I was down there with the guys. And you just nod at you like, you got to be kidding me. And a good friend of ours sort of looked at me, and he goes, how many holes in a row? And I go, 57. Are you counting? I'm counting, you know, without a birdie. So, yeah, it's just it's a fascinating game. I do really love the game. And it was, I think, the ultimate golfer's vent was to write a book on how to quit. And the thing that was the most surprising was that nobody ever done it before. You know, 400 years of this silly game with people getting frustrated from, you know, the time of, you know, Mary, Queen of Scots till today. And no one has ever written a book on how to quit. You'd think there would be one, but there wasn't. So.
Well, the name of the book is How to Quit Golf, a 12-Step Program. It's available on Amazon, it's in the bookstores, you can still find it around. Where do we go to get this thing?
Amazon.com, you can get it for Kindle. You can go to iTunes or iBooks, download it off there. Barnes & Noble's Nook, you can get it from there, and then Google Play. And if you just put, you know, How to Quit Golf in a search engine, it'll take you right to the ebook, which is the new delivery method that we had at the beginning of December. So it's kind of exciting. I'm digital
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Craig, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us this morning. We'll look forward to seeing you down at Pinehurst again, hopefully at the beginning of April. And we're definitely going to – anybody that's looking for a light read, you know, you want to get a gift for a golfaholic that you know, that's How to Quit Golf, recommended highly. Thanks again, Craig.
Fred, thanks very much for having me on.
There you have it. That was Craig Brass. He's the author of How to Quit Golf, a 12-step program. And I, Fred, you, his humor definitely came through it, and that's what comes through in the book. And I just want to read something I read about him where he was talking about, you know, he said, believe it or not, many have decided not to carry the book in their pro shops because, as they say, they are interested in people playing golf, not quitting golf. And his response was quite simply this: if legions of well-intending wives haven't been able to get their husbands to quit, what in the world makes you think I can do it? Yeah, that's going to come through in the book. It's definitely going to be a good read.
He has a great sense of humor. He's a lot of fun to talk to. You could hear it in the interview. We talked for a few minutes before we started taping, and he had me busting out laughing, and so you could see me smiling. You could hear me smiling all the way through the tape. Yeah, even though for a Michigan guy, he's a pretty good guy.
For a Michigan guy, huh? Okay. We got that disclaimer. Hey, we have exactly. another interview this week, and it's with J.R. Slaughter. He's the president of Juvent Sports and the VP of Sales at Juvent Regenerative Technologies Corporation. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about this short interview we have with him.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Carlos, recently told me about a new product that I should learn a little bit more about, and he set up an appointment for him to meet one of the owners of the company at the PGA Golf Show down in Orlando last month. Juvent Technology is a company that is using micro-impact platforms to improve athletes' health and fitness. The machine resembles a bathroom scales that you would just step on, but when you stand on it, vibration works up through your arches, feet, ankles, legs, hips, torso, shoulders, into your neck and head. It increases blood flow, so it helps strains, ligaments, tendons, and muscles, especially those around joints, to relieve pain and give more freedom of motion. So David Ledbetter is a big supporter of the Juvent process. Matter of fact, he was sharing their booth with the Juvent people. He has his students using the product. Suzanne Pedersen is one of his pupils, and she travels. She travels with one. She carries one around with her everywhere she goes. Ex-NFL great Ray Lewis says he was having problems. You know, he loves to play golf, and he was having trouble. He couldn't play because of pain and stiffness from playing football those years. And since he started using it, he has much more range of motion. The pain is gone. He's able to go out and play. Matter of fact, the NFL Players Alumni Association is now a partner for Juvent. So it's kind of a unique product. It's a way to help relieve pain in your joints. There is some good things that people with arthritis can use it and help them. So go ahead and play the tape.
We're here on the floor at the PGA Merchandise Golf Show here in Orlando. We're with J.R. Slaughter, who is the president of Juvent Sports, and he has a rather unique product that he's brought to the show this year. And J.R., we're great to talk to you. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
It's appreciated, Fred. It's Juvent Micro Impact Technology, and the device was made long-term for balance and stability in osteoporosis, but all the short-term benefits we're seeing it from arthritis, joint pain, knee pain, back pain, lower limb edema, working with people like my mother to professional athletes such as Ray Lewis, David Ledbetter, world number one tennis player Mike Bryan, and on and on and on.
So you're actually sharing the booth with David Ledbetter. You said he got one of your products and was kind of instrumental in helping you get involved and investing in the product, and he really believes in it quite a bit.
Yeah, David started using the device. He met one of our owners, Pete Simonson, 2 years ago. David had some acute knee pain where he would bend down for a putt, couldn't get back up. He started utilizing Juvent, and that knee pain went away. He got, at that time, world number two, Suzanne Pedersen on Juvent. She was having some issues. She travels the world with Juvent now. And then it's kind of led to Arlene McKittrick and now Ledbetter Academy. They endorse our product at the Academy and use it with their golfers.
People that maybe experience a little bit of lower back pain or hip pain or knee joint pain when playing golf or walking the golf course, this has some benefit for them just using it 20 minutes a day.
It's been phenomenal because it wakes your body up. So when you stand on the Juvent 10 to 20 minutes before you play golf or you go exercise, it wakes your skeletal system up. It gets everything firing, everything in sync. And we've seen tremendous benefits pre, and it's been tremendously for post. And with athletes, it's all about if you recover better, you perform better.
So for our golf listeners out there, that if you want to wake up your body a little bit before you go onto the course, you want to be able to turn a little bit better, have a little bit better core reaction, and maybe increase your swing speed, the Juvent could work very well for you. Where do we find this product?
Go to Juvent.com. And you can click on two sites, the Juvent Health site or the Juvent Sports site. If you click on testimonials on the Juvent Sports site, we have some unbelievable testimonials with Super Bowl champion Ray Lewis, with Eric Wood, with the head PT of Hospital for Special Surgery, Pete Drayovich. You'll see David Ledbetter on there. You'll see world number one Mike Bryan on there. And what these athletes are telling us is they can now concentrate on the sport they're doing. They're not like Mike Bryan when he's on the tennis court. He's not worried about his lower limb pain. He's pain-free now by utilizing Juvent, and then he can just focus on his tennis.
Juvent.com. That's where you need to go to look for it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
JR, thank you for taking your time, and we'll talk to you later.
Well, that was J.R. Slaughter, the president of Juvent Sports, and as you heard, a very interesting product there for health and improve your pains and all that with the joints and everything that you find. So Juvent, go to JUVENT.com, and from there, like he said, you can choose the health or the sports website for it.
Just, yeah, real quick story, Carlos. Before we get into the topic of the week, he had me try it, and so I got up on it, and I'm standing on it. And it, like I say, it's just like a scales. You step on it, and you stand there. You're not moving. You're not doing anything. You're just standing with the vibration coming up through your feet. And it's not a violent. It's just a small vibration. It's hardly anything. And we're talking, and I'm talking to he and one of his partners, I'm asking questions, and I'm into this thing about 6-7 minutes, and the sweat starts rolling off of me. One guy goes and gets me a towel. I mean, I'm just the water is just running off of me like I'm running like 3 miles or something. And he says, "You're warming up." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "What's going on?" He said, "No, it's a process." He said, "You're firing all those muscles. Your muscles are firing all the way from the bottom of your feet to the top of your head. You're firing all those muscles." He says, "It's like you're actually out running." But you don't have the violent collision and the jamming of your feet and your knees and all that stuff like into the pavement every step. It's just that gentle vibration. So your muscles are getting the reaction. They're firing, and that's increasing blood flow. So, I mean, I was totally soaked with sweat and just on the thing for like 7-8 minutes. So it does do something. It's amazing.
So there you have it. Just Juvent Sports. Go there. JUVENT.com. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we have our main topic of the week, the mental aspect in the game of golf and in everyday life. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our practice range. Every week, we take a subject, topic, and expand on it. Fred and I give our own takes on it. So this week, we're going to be talking about the mental aspect, especially in the game of golf, but it also applies to our everyday lives and other sports. You know, losses and bad decisions in sports and everyday life are very avoidable and come about as a consequence of ignorance on behalf of the people who take them. But simply, they don't prepare the brain as well as they do the body. In sports, it's very frustrating, but it's very fixable. Have to say that the ego rules sports, and teams and individual athletes devote every last cent to employing extra assistant coaches, sports scientists, and physical preparation gurus while they fatally under-resource mental preparation. There's too much money put into the body, into fitness, and not enough into making sure the players have prepared their minds, like having enough sports psychologists prior to events and in the planning of their training regimes. It's surprising when you hear many coaches always say that the game is played 99% above the shoulders, but then 98% of them don't address the mental skills. It's mind-baffling. Players repeat drills when mistakes are made instead of putting a premium on getting it right the first time, as one must do in the match. game situations have to be simulated as much as possible in preseason and training sessions, off seasons, and competitions set up that offer incentives for excellence. It can be as simple as making the losing team or player clean up the other's gears after training. Every game scenario can be replicated with properly structured drills and properly educated coaches. You know, Arnold Palmer, the king, told us a long time ago that the game is at least 80% mental. To me, in reality, sport is 100% mental. Our thoughts influence our actions, and our actions influence our thoughts. This is a never-ending cycle, often leading athletes and coaches to attribute poor performance in practice and competition to thinking too much. Athletes hear comments all the time like, stop thinking and just play. Clear your mind. Relax. Don't worry. Concentrate. Focus. Pay attention. What do these statements really mean, and how do you, as an athlete, try to accomplish these difficult feats during the rigors of practice and in the heat of competition? Can someone really stop thinking? Can you simply clear your mind? How do you relax? When someone tells you to concentrate, focus, and pay attention, what are you supposed to focus on, concentrate about, and pay attention to? Hey, I am not a renowned sports psychologist. If I would be one, I would be at Tiger Woods' residence right now talking to him. Reality is, players should spend more percentage of their time preparing their mind than what they are doing right now. Players must be happy to perform at their best. Also, business people, if they work better mentally, they can give their best under pressure. It also happens in our everyday lives. Whether closing a multi-million deal or getting the right coupon at the cashier at the right time. Making it right the first time you propose to your girlfriend, that's important to do it. But there's pressure everywhere to deal with. Fred, the ability to understand and manage pressure is a key life skill for everyone, whether you're an athlete, elite athlete, CFO, or dealing with life pressures.
You know, Carlos, that's kind of the unique aspect of sports in general, not just golf. The ability to free your mind, clear your mind of the pressure of the end result of the goal, and just perform. You know, did you see the emotion and the relief on Andrew Doat's face when he won the Thailand Open over the weekend? I got to see the the last 5, 6, 7 holes that he played. You know, he hadn't had status on the European Tour for 2 years. This gives him full status now. So, I mean, this was big for him. You know, and there you had Tongchai Daidi. I mean, we talk about him a lot. He's one of my favorites to watch. He gets so much out of his game. He's not a very big guy, but, man, he gets a lot out of his game. And, you know, he was trying to win this thing. It was the first time the event was played there in Thailand. It's a home game for him. He really wanted to win it. There he was on the last hole, par 5. He was 275 from the green. He knocks it on the green in 2. It was a beautiful shot. It's perfectly hit perfectly. And then he goes up there, and he just needs a 2-putt for birdie to tie to go to playoff, and he 3-putts. The pressure, you know, just he 3-putts. You know, we saw it on the U.S. tour. We've got Jimmy Furyk was leading after 54 holes. You know, since he won the FedEx Cup back in 2010, he was 0-for-8, and now he's 0-for-9 in winning on Sunday after leading on Saturday night. You know, and he said, you know, I had been putting too much pressure on myself. I was trying to win too much. You know, I was expecting myself to win. But he had said going into Sunday's round this week that he had kind of freed up his mind. It was his first event this year that he was playing. He wasn't even expecting to make the cut. And here he was leading the tournament after 54 holes. So, you know, it's all about the mind, Carlos, all about the confidence. And, you know, that is bred. That confidence and the freeing of the mind is bred from practice and performing well in practice, so that you're confident when you get to the golf course or you get under the stress situations,
you know you can perform. You know, another example, Brant Snedeker. You know, he had put a lot of pressure on himself this week. You know, he's trying to get back into the top 50. He had fallen outside the top 50 in the world, so he wasn't eligible for the Masters. He wasn't eligible for the WGC Cadillac. So he wanted to get back to the top 50. If you noticed, you know, last year his swing had gotten way too handsy, and I noticed this week especially, if you notice how much better he was turning with his core and getting through his shots, much, much better. But he had put a lot of pressure on himself to do well to get back in the top 50. And you could see it in his emotions at the end of the day on Sunday, how much this win meant. You know, this guy's got more money than he's ever going to spend the rest of his life. He won the $10 million a couple of years ago for the FedEx Cup, but it's still about the wins. They want those trophies. So, anyhow, Carlos, and you mentioned a little bit about this, but we can relate all of this to the everyday guy in his job. You know, you're trying to land that big account, or you're trying to make that commission check for the week or your month or your quarter or whatever. And, you know, you see the end result. You got to close this. You want this. You know, I got to get this done. Pressure, work, whatever. But you have to focus on the process. The process, the steps. 1, 2, 3, 4 of getting the job done. You can't let your mind go out to the end and see that rainbow, that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You have to stay in the present, focus on the time, and do your work. So, and be confident in that, so then that will produce the results that you need. But, you know, these guys are used to it. They deal with it week in and week out, and still we see it affect their play. Jim Furyk, what's he been on tour for, I don't know, what, 18 years or something? And it still affects him, you know, on a Sunday in the last round. So that's one of the things about golf. It's how you deal. You know, we see so many guys that can hit the ball so well on the range, and they go over to the course and they can't hit it a lick. You know, it's how you deal with that pressure, how you handle it, and it's born. It comes back from the practice and the confidence you have in the practice that you're doing the right things. So when you go to the course, you know it's going to happen for you. So, Carlos, those are the kind of things that I had to talk about for that, if you have anything else.
No, I believe we have covered everything we wanted to talk about. The mental aspect is really something very key everywhere. Not only sports, but in our everyday lives. And we have a couple of minutes to go, so before that, we have some final putts we would like to get in. I'm going to talk about Dustin Johnson real quick. He seems to have knocked off whatever rust lingered from that six-month PGA Tour leave of absence when he finished tied for fourth with a final round 666 here at Pebble Beach. He played also alongside his future father-in-law, Wayne Gretzky, and they finished sixth in the Pro-Am. So he hasn't finished in the top five since last year's U.S. Open, and it's great to see him back, even though he has won twice there, and so that's a happy place for him. But it's great to see him playing that way, and he said afterwards that he thinks it won't be too long before he extends his streak of seasons with at least one PGA Tour win to eight. And it was also great to see, like you mentioned, Brant Snedeker win, Nick Watney finishing second, Jason Day the winner the previous week. He finished tied for fourth with DJ. He seems to be peaking at the right time for the Masters. Maybe that would be his first major. And Jordan Spieth finished tied for seventh. Great to see him there to finish well. Any final thoughts you have? We have about a minute and a half to go.
Yeah, just real quick, Morgan Pressel is to be honored by the Golf Writers Association with the Charlie Bartlett Award. It's given to it was awards presented by Aberdeen Asset Management. It's given to a planning professional for unselfish contributions to the betterment of society. Her charity or her foundation has raised more than $3.4 million over the last 6 years with some golf outings and things she has there in the Florida area. So good for her. John Daly's back in the news. If you saw him on Thursday, he shot a 765 in the first round of Pebble Beach. He comes back with 73-72 and misses a 54-hole cut. He didn't play on Sunday. A little bit more for JD. He's also his ex-wife won a lawsuit in Mississippi she can sue his current girlfriend for breaking up their marriage. I thought that was kind of funny. He probably doesn't, but drama just seems to follow JD around. And one last thing, there's a new movie with a storyline including golf and gambling, produced by longtime network sports producer Terry Jastrow and actress Ann Archer. The name of the movie is The Squeeze, and that will be coming out in March. Looks like it's going to be a really good movie. Golf and gambling, what can be better? Back to you.
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest in the world of golf. And thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIGs, Chris Bass, the author of How to Quit Golf, a 12-step process, and Jair Slaughter, president of G1 Sports. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. So happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.